Hello, welcome to the Astra Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm here with my friend and partner, Rob Stein. Rob, hello.
Hi, John.
Happy 4th of July weekend. It is Friday, July 2nd, a couple hours after the employment situation report was released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And we're going to try to chop that up for you, as well as give you our view of the economy in general. Rob, why don't you tell me what you think the economy is like in a nutshell, two or three sentences?
Oh, that's going to be a tough one. I think in two or three sentences, the economy is still in recovery mode, trying to get back the jobs that we had. But I would think panic is behind us.
Yep, I would definitely agree with that. And I guess I would say that, yeah, it's not the boom that I was expecting for this summer at this point, but it is a steady recovery. And our topic for today, the labor market, is sort of the odd fact out. Like the rest of the economy seems to be growing extremely strong compared to where the labor market is.
Yeah, that is an interesting point, and we'll see why perhaps in the next few months. But I think as the global economy starts to connect again, we will see that boom that maybe we were expecting by now. But you got to get the pieces in place for what's happening in the global economy to connect with the domestic economy, and we might see that. Now, additionally, there's a lot of armchair economists talking about why they believe the labor market is in the position it's in. And I'm just going to say it's probably a lot more than what conventional thoughts thrown around.
That's a good point about the international. Yeah, I think maybe next week, Nick and I will do a review of the international situation because we're pretty parochial here in America and we're far ahead of a lot of people in opening up. So we should take a quick look at that for our listeners. Let's jump into the numbers. So change in non-farm payrolls up 850,000 this month for June. That is about three times as high as a typical month in average growth periods. But even at this pace, it's going to be a year before we are back to where we were in January 2020 in terms of jobs. Digging into the numbers a little bit, the unemployment rate actually went up 5.9%. It's at 5.9% from 5.6. The underemployment rate came down a lot from 10.2 to 9.8. So I'm going to say that the unemployment rate increase is a little bit of statistical noise. They actually run two surveys, a household survey and an establishment survey. And some of these numbers come from different parts of the survey. So I'm thinking that's just a little bit of noise in the unemployment rate because the labor force did not increase that much. The labor force participation rate overall was unchanged last
month. With the numbers so big moving, it's not a surprise that they're not moving in tandem, the unemployment rate and the amount of job growth in any particular 30-day period.
Yeah. And if you look at some of the other numbers, number of employees part-time, working part-time for economic reasons, that means that you want to be working full-time, but you can't get full-time work. That took a big dip last month, as you'd expect, given the anecdotes of difficulty in hiring people. So the story that you hear on TV is McDonald's can't hire anybody and they have to pay $1,000 bonuses and stuff like that. And that is consistent with some of the things we see, like quits rates being up and, like I just said, the involuntary part-time work being down. But at the same time, average hours is going down. Not a lot, but not going up, right? It's not an especially high level either. So I guess we actually talked about this last month, I think, that you can't necessarily squeeze a few more hours out of people, but it's still odd that they're not making people work a little bit harder to try and make up for the employees they supposedly cannot get. Job gains were concentrated in leisure and hospitality. Of the 850, 350 jobs were in leisure and hospitality. That is good. That's the area that's still the worst hit from the pandemic. So that's the area that needs to grow back.
John, the narrative of people are getting paid to stay home, I believe it's inaccurate and incredibly pervasive throughout conversations about employment trends. I don't think that the connection is quite one-to-one with that. I think there's other reasons, and hopefully these reasons are transitory, that we are seeing the labor market and shortages in the labor market occurring. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's probably a little bit of truth to the higher unemployment insurance compensation, letting people be out of the labor force. That is going to be a lot clearer in a few months because half the states have actually decided to cut off their extra unemployment insurance and they're kicking a lot of people off the rolls. So if jobs go up in Arkansas and Mississippi a lot more than they do in California and New York, then gosh, maybe that was right. We'll know pretty soon. And additionally, you do see in the prime age labor participation rate, right? So as people age 25 to 54, Rob and I sadly excluded from prime age employment, those numbers are down a lot from the pandemic, but are at a post-pandemic high for both men and women. And there is some speculation that the extra care burdens on women is leading to the lower labor participation rate for them. So hopefully that will close up as we get back to work. Again, on the theme of the people who got hurt the most beginning to come back, the lowest jobs growth was the highest in low wage industries. So that is good for a broad recovery. Also interesting, so the number of people they've been asking, a special survey, are you teleworking because of the pandemic? And that's gone from 35% of employed down to 15% of employed in the last 12 months. And it doesn't say, am I working at home because of the pandemic? No, I'm still working from home. We had some staff changes and we closed our New York office. I'm going to work from home for a while. So am I working at home for the pandemic? No. And are the people who are like, they worked at home for a year and then they tell their boss, hey, I can work from home forever. Are they working at home? So there might be more people working from home than that suggests, but at least for the emergency part of that is trending in the right direction.
Right. And there was a survey, and I don't have the total stats on it, about not only working from home, but are you going to be staying with the same employer? Mm. Are you going to be changing jobs or changing fields? Mm-hmm. And John, the only thing I remember from it, and it was quite high, was the amount of people, the percentage that were looking to do that. And I think you're seeing many people in the workforce using this as an opportunity to make changes that they were dreaming of making, particularly in the lower wage area, certain nursing homes and things of that nature, where it was a lot of work and pay wasn't great. I see certainly around the Chicago area, people that I know who are looking. And because of the amount of job openings, you are getting people thinking of changing careers. And I believe that that transition is also factoring into some of these numbers.
Yeah, I think that's the quits rate is at an all-time high, right? About 3% of employment, I think, something like that. And that's definitely a sign of people feeling like, well, I don't want to be working my ass off for $12 an hour when I can do something easier for more money. And so I think businesses, and I think we've had this discussion too, this is going to be a one-time adjustment or an ongoing phase of the economy. So I guess I feel like there'll be more of a one-time adjustment in terms of, yes, Chipotle will have to raise wages and a bunch of other people who are used to having $12 an hour labor are going to have to make do with $15 an hour labor and raise prices if they can. But then I think that's going to be the end of it. I don't think it's going to be a cycle, just given this country's preferences. Like, it's not going to be a cycle of giving more and more money to labor at the expense of capital.
Yeah, but I don't want to get too far off the trail here, but there's been this decade-long labor isn't rewarded as much as management. That's the pay disparity, et cetera, et cetera. And this might be a gradual improvement to that. Obviously, nothing that's going to solve the imbalance, and it's very difficult to determine does capital deserve more of a reward than labor, but it's been incredibly lopsided. And I think this might be a little bit of a nudge into the direction that many people have been complaining about.
But I honestly think that would be better for economic growth. I think it'd be better to have fewer billionaires and more broad growth because, like, the people who earn $50,000 a year spend every dime and the other people don't.
Well, that's a philosophical thing. You work hard, that might be their goal and objective, and you want to continue that. But what I'm thinking is rather than various tax ways of readjusting that or other means, it's probably the most productive to have the share of profits for whatever reason get distributed a little differently. And I think that you're more willing to share your cut the profit pie for sure. with people contributing than blindly redistribute. I think we're going to finally realize that the value of labor isn't as inelastic as you think, especially now when you're waiting for somebody to do, you pick it, right? Clean your gutters, to set up your internet. At that particular minute, it's more valuable than your CFO. So,
not our CFO. Many people see
it. Not ours. But I used to joke that when my son was very young, I'm more screwed if my nanny babysitter doesn't show up than I am if my senior level executive vice president of grilled cheese sandwiches doesn't show up for that day.
Right. There's a couple of things that are worth happening the last 10 days or so. Some of this is continuing the same themes that we've had before. I really want to mention personal income. It's down a little bit in May because those stimulus/recovery checks have stopped going out. But it's still at an extremely high number, like personal income, $2 trillion above trend, basically. And a lot of that is coming from compensation, not as much from unemployment benefits and transfers that has been in the most of the pandemic. So again, there's going to be a lot of dry powder when people get more optimistic. And we did also have some consumer confidence numbers, which are much stronger. And one thing that's interesting is that people's confidence about their future employment, their present employment, all that very, very high. So the jobs market is tighter than the $6 million jobs deficit would suggest in some way. I think that's the important thing to think about.
Yes, another thing that'll push wages even further, perhaps.
There is another Fed meeting a couple weeks ago. What's your take on that, Rob? Where do you think Powell is on the dove-hawk spectrum? Or do you think that's not quite the right way to think about it these days?
We talked about that before. Back in the olden days, if I can say that, it was really binomial, right? Are you hawkish? Are you dovish? These three people are hawkish. These are dovish. And here we go. But I think this is a unique situation. And I think that you can say things like, I'm dovish today, hawkish tomorrow, dovish on Thursday. And once upon a time, the trends would stay in place for much longer, this last period, very long accommodative stance. So I think they're starting to telegraph some of the things that we thought last year that they were afraid to say because it perhaps impacted the today. I'm surprised at how quickly they started looking ahead in the 08-09. It was, this is a long time before we make any changes. And let me define long time, years. So I am a little surprised that they're already telegraphing that if things do overheat, they will react and not using words like data dependent, et cetera.
Yeah, with them, one thing I wonder about is this sort of dislocation that we just talked about, the labor market. So we're 6 million jobs below where we were in January, and yet the economy was going to grow, 8%, something like that this year. It's supposed to grow 3%, 3 or 4% next year. But in their new framework that they talked about, they spent a couple of years developing a new framework, definitely going to tie it to unemployment. Did they pick the wrong bogey is one thing I'm wondering. Powell has said repeatedly, and they basically don't have a choice at this point because of how much ink they have spilled saying this is what they're going to do. They've been saying all the time that they want to get employment back to where it was. But what if the shape of the labor market has shifted somehow they haven't accounted for because of the pandemic and people are like reevaluating their lives and joining ski
patrol?
Or whatever.
I couldn't agree with you more on that, right? And when you look at the demographic of the Fed, you almost want to put some 21-year-old millennial there. That's like the wealth effect for us isn't the same as Greenspan identified decades ago.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely because true, right? The boomers had much higher share of wealth than the millennials do. The boomers at this age had much more wealth than the millennials do.
But they also wanted it and they cared about it. And that's how they define their lives. And I think that the millennials are, hey, I want to buy a house, but not because in 20 years I wanted to sell it for my retirement. Like I think they just look at the world differently, including economics, money, saving, rates, return, et cetera. So
I don't know about that. I don't know how much of this philosophical thing and how much is that they just don't have as much money.
Yeah, and they're backing into that. That's a good point. But if the wealth effect is as powerful as Greenspan thought, and by having the stock market be the defining benchmark for that, at the very least, I believe that the millennials benchmark for what they consider the wealth or wealth effect is going to be different. And is it the value of crypto? I don't know, but it's just not going to be purely stocks, bonds, and housing. So I think that that's something. But I do agree that there is a substantial change in looking at how you're going to measure and control the economy. I think the Fed's leaving themselves some flexibility. The inflation rate of 2% that they were looking for, they were saying maybe a little higher, maybe a little lower. Full employment, I think, is going to perhaps need to be defined differently. Even from when I was in school and 8% was sort of the magic number, then 6% was sort of the magic number. If you can only borrow money at 8%, you were golden. So I think there's been a lot of change, and it's going to need to be factored into how they view the economy and when they make their moves.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how that transitions.
5.5%, 5.9% unemployment when I was a lad was considered full employment.
Yeah, but we had 3% unemployment 2 years ago. Why can't we get back to that?
Oh, I'm not suggesting we can't get back to that. I'm just suggesting what the views are. 3% employment would have been like for sure inflationary, and that hasn't been the case. Cool. So I think that there's going to be changes. And one of the things that'll be interesting is with 7.5 or 6.5 million fewer workers, but GDP going to be cruising this year and next year, won't that change the worker productivity number? And
because it's the low wage workers, which have dropped out of the workforce by and large, right? Like college educated unemployment rate is 3%. High school educated unemployment rate is 9%, something like that. So like it's the low wage workers are dropped out. So the higher wages presumably mean higher productivity.
Right. But they've dropped out not because they're getting fired. So I think that that has a much different impact on the economy.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know exactly why they've dropped out. We don't know exactly why they've dropped out.
Right.
Are they like, oh, until this money runs out, I'm not going to work until I have to, which is fair enough.
No, I get that. But regardless of the reason, it's definitely changing how you've got to measure the economy or measure what changes you make. I don't think we're at a point right now that lowering rates is going to change the path or the timing of unemployment.
Well, that's good because rates are way lower than they are. So do you remember in the euro crisis, the big change was Draghi said, we'll do whatever we have to do to protect the euro. And believe me, we've got enough ammunition. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, he's serious. And that marked sort of a bottom of the euro crisis. So when is the Fed chair going to say something like that about inflation? Like, look, if inflation is coming, believe me, we've got enough tools to crush it, or don't worry about it. Some sort of like stark, fierce statement about inflation. When's that going to happen? The next 12 months, next 24 months? When do you think?
I think that this inflation spike turnaround is something they've been trying to get for a long time. And so maybe this is not the right way they wanted to get it. I think it's going to be longer than you think before they squash something that they've been rooting for. So I don't know that we're going to get quite that type of statement like we have with we're providing as much liquidity as will ever be needed and unlimited swap lines. I don't know that they're going to come out and be that aggressive with inflation for a long time. They still think it might be transitory, right? So,
I think that's fair. All right, I think we'll leave it there. And in the meantime, if you want more economic analysis or charts, you can check out the Aster website, asterim.com, the asterinvestmentmanagement.com. You can download the Aster Research app from your favorite app store, or you can contact your Aster sales representative. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, John. Enjoy.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.